there will be powers within that to enable the regulator to take action in a range of measures if it needs. And we are strongly advocating that there be graduated powers, because the experience for some of the overseas regulators is that if you don't, then you get an unfortunate relationship with the sector that you're trying to regulate. If really all you've got is deregistration as your power.
So can I just ask, what happens if there's a dispute about whether or not something is charitable?
The ATO will accept the ACNC's determination on charitable status.
What if you say someone's not and they want to take you further, they want to fight you?
We'll have an internal review process, and then in the first instance it would probably be taken to the Administrative Appeals Tribunal, and then beyond. They would be taken to you.
I mean, that brings up a good question. I think the next part that perhaps I thought we could spend a few minutes exploring, and that is how you see the staffing and the culture of the ACNC perhaps as being... Is it really just... I have to ask this question because it was on the invitation. Is it just the tax office rebadge? Are we just bringing across their staff and putting a new label on it? How do you feel about that?
Oh, very strongly. And that it can't. We'd completely defeat the purpose. There is a challenge in that the decision that Cabinet took was that the ACNC would be independent, in that it will... receive its own appropriation and it will report annually to Parliament. However, it is to take its back office functions from the ATO. So when it comes to accommodation, IT support, HR support and so on. Now, having said that, to give credit to the ATO, they're being very responsive. And so, for example, the budgets that were drafted and indeed endorsed had a series of services that we don't think it's wise for the ACNC to leave with the ATO. So, for example, the phone advisory service was left with the ATO. Bad idea.
learning, people nodding.
Learning and development budgets were left with the ATO. And we think that if you want to create your own culture and determine where your own learning needs are, then it's just not wise to have that with the ATO. Following a visit that I made to the Charity Commission of England and Wales, where I saw it firsthand the way that they deal with information as it comes into the Charity Commission, and that is in an integrated fashion. So whether it's a phone inquiry, an email or post, it's all digitised, phone inquiry into an email or an electronic message, and dealt with in an integrated fashion, with staff able to move across those various functions. And again, the phone inquiry, the scanning of information and so on, was going to be handled by the ATO, and we've said, no, we want to handle it in this way, A, because it's more efficient, and B, because people deal directly with the regulator. There's no intermediary at all.
And we think it's really important as well that the information that we get from the sorts of queries, the sorts of concerns that are coming to the regulator, then inform the information that we put on the web, that we use in our education materials, in our policy and guidance. And actually, you've got to be able to close that circle, really, in order to assist the sector effectively. So you may not stop the first 20 queries about a particular issue, but if you're able to respond proactively, put messages out there, you might stop the first 20,000. And that's quite important in terms of learning and culture. And we think it's really important that the new regulator is independent, that it has a degree of understanding and empathy for the sector that it's regulating. And in terms of recruitment, we're looking to recruit people from a broad range of backgrounds. So, of course, we're hoping to successfully recruit people with expertise from the ATO, but also we want to recruit people from the sector, people from business, people from other government bodies as well. And it's very much about forming a new culture and a new organisation. And I think that the starting point, really, in terms of approach, is very much that we think that people are coming together to form charities and not-for-profits because they want to do something positive in their community, they want to make a difference, sometimes they want to change the world. And actually, our role is to ensure that the regulation that we impose is proportionate, doesn't stifle that sort of initiative, and is, as far as possible, enabling for the people who are trying to form and to run these organisations. So we think it's really important that there's a strong education role, that we're producing useful material through the web and through other means. But like any regulator, you also have to have some teeth. Like any sector, there'll always be bad apples. There'll always be people who are looking to use the organisation for inappropriate means. And so it's important that there are also some compliance powers. So where there is serious misconduct, mismanagement, where there's harm, that the regulator can take strong and decisive enforcement action. But our starting point is that people are acting in good faith, that they're trying to do something positive, and that we have a role to be helpful and supportive.
So in terms of nuts and bolts, it's been announced obviously that the office is in Melbourne, and we're obviously here today. So I'm trying to visualise that the doors open, how many staff you'll have, what they'll actually be doing. Will you have staff in Canberra? Can you perhaps just tease that out a bit more?
So we'll have more staff than was originally envisaged because of the functions that I mentioned, like learning and development, and the scanning and the phone inquiry service and so on. So an estimate is 94 at the moment. And
that sounds very precise. Very impressive.
That's true. And we're sort of, because we're in conversations with a recruitment agency, we're really now trying to get it as exact as we can. And that's, for those of you who are involved in administrative roles, we don't have our 2012-13 budget exactly, and so that's the reason I hesitate a little, is that you just need to have some flexibility that if you appear to be overstaffing, you can do a tiny bit of clawback. So 94 might seem like quite a lot, but when you think about the range of functions, we'll have a policy. Well, first of all, we're going to have two broad arms, I suppose. One, we still need final authorisation from the Australian Public Service, but we want to have two assistant commissioners. This exceeds the SES, the Senior Executive Service cap, and so you need permission from the Special Minister of State to do that. David, in his first week in Australia, did a very impressive application for this process, so we're hoping that that's successful. With the two assistant commissioners, you could have one with a focus over the legal and the policy area, and one with a broader focus over charity services, slightly more operational. And so underneath the two arms, you'd have a policy, legal, and a compliance and education functions, and then registration, business support, and communications. I think that's the division.
And your first tier advice support services.
Technical advice within that. So that's how it's looking, and we're very keen that there be a high level of integration across teams. For a small regulator, it would be an absolute failure if you got into any silo mentality. So the design of the fit out of the office is such that it ought to enable a high level of interaction between the various members of the teams. We're actually aiming to have quite a number of relatively senior in terms of public service rankings officers, because if you think about the nature of the work, it's going to require quite technical and specialist expertise. Having said that, some of the charity regulators that have begun recently, like the OSCA, the Office of the Register of Scottish Charities, and the New Zealand Charity Commission, within the last 5 years, they have attracted groups of young graduates and managed to get a real impetus into the organisation that way. So we're hoping that we can do that as well. So just the final bit, yeah. The Canberra presence will be a minimal presence, to be honest, because it's not conducive to that integrated means of operating to have too many staff there. So certainly there will be a presence, but as I say, with the bulk of the staff here in Melbourne.
And in terms of timing, mm-hmm. we're hoping to get the first level of adverts, which is the director appointments, out towards the end of this month or early December. So the adverts will be going out then. The bulk of the recruitment will be late January, early February.
Things are moving. Moving more to perhaps the client or the sector that you're, the charities, I would just been wondering, how will they actually know? I mean, we all know about this, it's all top of our mind, all our clients and people we deal with would know, but there's a lot of charities out there that are very small. Will they get a letter from the tax office saying thank you but bye-bye, or
what happens? Know you. Well, the tax office, and I don't think Michael Hardy's here, but the assistant commissioner who's had the oversight of the area for a number of years is in Melbourne today for a session that, in fact, Michelle Russell from the Charity Commission of England and Wales is offering on compliance, and that'll be at the tax office later this morning. And so Michael's flying into that, and if he were here, he could answer the question himself.
Later, but yeah.
Yeah. So the intention is that they do a little cleaning of the data, that they have simply been required to determine charitable status for the purpose of an application of a tax concession. They haven't had any need beyond that to check the charitable status or whatever. There are likely to be moribund entities in there, wrong addresses, you know, and so. So they're going to try and do that basic cleaning of the data and hand over it to us in as good a condition as possible. But we know from the experience of overseas regulators that it will require, in time, a re-registration. And unlike New Zealand, where day one they required all the charities to re-register, we are intending to phase it. So beyond 2013, when the statutory definition of charity comes into play, we will begin a process of assessing the charitable status of the roughly 60,000 charities.
So, I mean, in terms of organisations that are already charities, they probably won't see a great deal of change. So they will be notified, we imagine, by the ATO, if not by the ACNC, of the change in arrangements. But there'll be an assumption that if they were charities before, they will remain charities when they come over. And from the 1st of July 2012, what we should have on the website is quite a simple list, really, of all the charitable entities that have come over from the ATO. And of course, once that list goes up, we imagine that people will contact us and tell us whether some of the details are perhaps out of date, and possibly whether some of the organisations are no longer in existence. As we register new charities from the 1st of July 2012, they will go on that simple list. And it's really from the 1st of July 2013 that people will see something quite significantly different as the new portal goes live and we have much more information